The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Hello, and welcome to the American College of Osteopathic Internists Annual Convention and Scientific Sessions. This year's meeting was held in conjunction with the Annual Clinical Assembly of the American College of Osteopathic Surgeons. The meeting was held October 11th through 15th, 2017, and featured nationally known speakers covering a wide variety of topics of interest to the practicing physician. The meeting was held at the Gaylord National Resort and Convention Center in National Harbor, Maryland. The program chair is Dr. Annette Caron, and the theme for this year's presentations is Goldilocks Medicine, Not Too Little, Not Too Much. Too Much or Too Little Concern, the latest on contrast and the kidney, is presented by Dr. Jeffrey Packer.
My first observation is there is a whole lot bigger of a room for the surgeons than for us. What does that mean? And I'm just going to reach out briefly to those of you in the audience who are contemplating what you want to do with the rest of your life, and to let you know that my world isn't what you think it is. Because, I mean, look at me. I spend the bulk of my day doing surgery, and I'm an internist. But that's a whole other story, and it's part of nephrology. Anyway, Goldilocks. Here's the spoiler alert. You can leave now. That's all you need to know. But I'm going to go through a lot of stuff. The disclosures, and really has nothing to do with anything we're doing today. And right off the bat, I am not going to talk about gadolinium and NSF. All you need to know about that is don't give it. Okay. So contrast nephropathy, I mean, it's been around forever. What is it? You know, we change from acute renal failure to acute kidney injury. And this happens after you get iodinated contrast media, hence contrast nephropathy. Now, when I was a wee tad, we were told, you know, this is it's usually temporary, but guess what? It's not always reversible. And when I was coming through the system, we were told we really don't understand what causes this. You know what? We really don't understand what causes this, even though we understand a lot. So we know that contrast directly leads to tubular toxicity, tubular hypoxia, tubular injury. Anybody ever have the opportunity to take X-ray dye and spill it and touch it? I mean, it is this thick, viscous, sticky stuff. And if you get into your magic submarine and go down into the deep interstitium of the kidney, it's a pretty scary place. It's dark, and it's on the verge of ischemia when things are well. And now you put this stuff through there, and it has this terrible effect. In addition, it stimulates endothelial factors, and you get vasoconstriction, which just exacerbates the hypoxemia, and there's some direct tubular toxicity. It's the perfect storm. So where does this toxicity come from? We know that X-ray dye inhibits the mitochondria. And, you know, for some of you that are whizzes at molecular biology or whizzes at clinical pharmacology, you get this. But basically, it leads to more generation of these free radicals, and they scavenge nitric oxide, which we know is a vasodilator. So again, it's another factor leading to the hypoxemia. And at the same time, when you get X-ray dye by stimulation of some other factors, there is an increased oxygen consumption. So the tissue needs more oxygen, we're delivering less oxygen. It's just perfect. In addition, there's some direct action on the cellular membranes that leads to cytotoxicity. So you take this thick, viscous stuff. Exactly how is this happening? Well, experimentally, if I take some other thick, viscous say that 10 times fast, like mannitol, and I do histopathology, it looks very similar. So there is something just about the osmotic stress, if you will, that leads to this. And by the way, this stuff gets filtered, it enters the tubule, and now we've got a big oncotic gradient, and it leads to more concentration. So it's a multiplying factor. And it directly affects the red blood cells. So almost analogous to, say, sickle cell. When the red cell loses its deformability, and now we've got a vasoconstricted microscopic blood vessel. It's a problem. The red cell can't squeeze through, and it's another factor. So the vasoconstriction, where does it all come from? I already alluded to a lot of this is endothelial generated factors. Years ago, I used to tell students, when you're making rounds with someone like me and they pimp you with the question of what can cause this, you'll never be wrong if you say prostaglandins. And this is just another effect, because there's stimulatory, there's inhibitory, there's constricting, there's dilated, but in balance, it leads to vasoconstriction. And additionally, again, either through endothelial factors or through osmotic forces, there's a direct action on vascular smooth muscle. Now, guess what? Who gets X-ray dye? Sick people. People that already have pre-existing vascular disease. They're a setup. So we take a bad pipe, we make it worse, we increase oxygen consumption, we poison the mitochondria, we kill the tubular cells, and they get a problem. And when the apoptosis of the cells occurs, they slough, and now they block the tubule, which is one of the, we used to have these five mechanisms that we believed were the pathogenic models of acute kidney injury, and this was one of them. So, okay, we got all that. Who gets it? Well, let's talk about risk factors, and some of this is going to be a walk down memory lane. Some of this you know, and some of this might be new. Well, what about if your kidneys aren't normal to begin with? Is that a risk factor? The answer is, yeah, probably. Why? Well, there have been some studies. And we know if your kidneys are allegedly healthy and you get X-ray dye, the actual incidence of acute kidney injury, it's pretty low. I mean, it happens, but it's pretty low. And we know that people who have decreased renal function, it's significantly higher, at least in some studies. And we know that when you look at it, it's proportional to the kidney dysfunction. So the worse your kidneys, the more likely you are to get this. I'll take that. What about proteinuria? Proteinuria, we generally understand that any kind of kidney disease with proteinuria, you're liable to get progression of your renal disease quicker than if you don't have proteinuria. Is it a risk factor here? Well, I once learned it was, because we said that proteinuria is a risk factor for nephropathy. But again, it turns out that the risk factor, whether or not it's independent, is not so clear-cut. But we'll accept it. What about age? Is it true that the older you are, the more likely you are to get acute kidney injury? Okay. I would like to say yes. Why? Well, first of all, my kidney function is not the same today as it was 20 years ago, because I'm older. That's, we think, a part of aging. Okay? And we know that at least in some studies, there's an association between over the age of 65, some of us are starting to resemble that, and acute kidney injury from contrast, there's this association. And we also know, again, from studies that there's an incremental risk. The older you are, the older you get. However, there's a lot of data that says, maybe it's not a factor. So here we raise the question, is it your age or is it the stuff you have wrong with you when you're older that's the risk factor? Well, even if it's the comorbidities, it's still something to pay attention to. Risk factor, diabetes. Okay, this is a classic. We know, or we think we know, that diabetes and contrast kidney injury go hand in hand. So anybody with diabetes, and the endocrinologists in the room know this very well, get an increased oxygen consumption in that kidney. And remember back with the vasoconstriction and oxygen demand and hypoxemia, okay? And we know, we use the term single nephron GFR. And the single nephron GFR in the kidney goes up for a variety of reasons. So it requires, if you will, more energy, more oxygen. But these are diabetics. What do they have wrong with them? They have vascular disease. So is it the diabetes? Is it the increased oxygen demand? Is it the signal nephron GFR? Is it the vascular disease? Is it something else? Hard to say, because when you look at the information, it's all over the place. Nevertheless, there is this association. Diabetes is certainly a risk factor. Now, what about the X-ray dye itself? Remember when they came out with this low ionic contrast, and it was going to be the godsend, it was going to fix everything, we weren't going to see any problems anymore. So let's look at that. First of all, how much contrast? Does it make a difference? Yeah, it's pretty clear. There's very good information that says the more contrast, the more likely you are to get AKI. A lot of us here work in areas where there's a specialized cardiovascular hospital. We have one in Phoenix, and we do a lot of acute dialysis there. Now, here's the good news. Instead of getting cut open from your sternum to your pelvis and have your aorta repaired with an 80% mortality surgery, now we've got these aortobifem stent grafts and so forth. But we kind of put our tongue in cheek and we say these guys back up a 30,000 gallon tanker truck of contrast to the cath lab and they use it. So good news, bad news. There is a clear correlation with the dose. My group, some years ago, we looked at chronic kidney disease patients doing interventions and angiograms on their vascular access. And in our hands, using less than 10 cc's of contrast, what we found was that, and these are people that had a vascular access, they weren't on dialysis, but they were really close. What we found is some had a transient increment in serum creatinine, AKA decrease in their GFR, but it resolved within a month, and there was no patient in our cohort that required dialysis, as near as we could tell, because of a low dose of contrast. So maybe add some credence. Subsequently, University of Miami, my buddy Arif Asif down there did the similar sort of analysis with intravenous contrast for vein mapping in anticipation of vascular access surgery. And in less than 20 cc's of contrast, they were not seeing an issue. So you put it all together, yeah, the more contrast, the worse it is. Well, what about the type? You know, this fabulous non-ionic, lower ionic contrast. In studies, it really doesn't show a benefit, with the possible exception of this newer agent, iodixanol. But again, the data is very conflicting, but we can say maybe it's a better agent. Okay. Here we go, angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors, ARBs. Well, okay, this is not elective surgery, but yeah, it's a procedure. Nevertheless, here's what we know about that. It might be an independent risk factor for acute kidney injury. And again, in some studies, there's a statistically significant increase in patients receiving these drugs that get X-ray dye in terms of their outcomes. But there's just as many studies that say, no, it doesn't matter. So, again, is it the agent or is it why they're taking the agent? Volume status. This is the biggie. Out of all the things I'm going to talk about, this is the only one that I can stand up here and I can say for sure, when you're volume depleted, X-ray dye hurts you. Period, end of story. Remember, we all understand that volume status is a relative thing. You can have somebody that has anasarca but a crappy cardiac output. Their kidneys see them as volume depleted, right? Congestive heart failure is a renal disease. Sorry, but it is. So if you're volume depleted, one of the things is it decreases your GFR. GFR is associated with kidney injury from X-ray dye. It also leads to compensatory mechanisms with avid reabsorption, affects that whole osmotic gradient thing, which increases the toxicity in the tubules. And so we really accept volume status to be a big player. Now, here's some more fun things. Prostaglandin inhibition. Raise your hand if you've ever taken ibuprofen, and everybody in this room will. My gosh, I get the stock bottle from Costco, you know. And we know that if you're taking an NSAID, and you get volume depleted or have a decreased cardiac output, your kidneys don't like that. Now, every summer where I live in August, they recruit for the academy that teaches you to be a firefighter. And you're a young guy, it's a pretty good gig. It's 24 on, 48 off. You can be really macho, you know, and life is good. They pay you pretty well. So these young, muscle-bound guys go in August, take this test, and it involves carrying 50-pound loads and climbing up and down ladders in the August heat and stuff, because they have to pass this test to qualify, to train to be a firefighter. And they're young and stupid, and they don't drink much fluids. And then they go home, and they take their ibuprofen. And every August, 3 days after the test, the ERs fill up with young guys puking with creatinines of 6 and, you know, rhabdomyolysis. And it's like an annual event. It's a party. But that being said, we know NSAIDs and volume depletion or decreased cardiac performance or decreased renal blood flow is a bad combination. And if, in fact, your GFR changes and I give you X-ray dye, that might be a bad thing. But additionally, the prostaglandin inhibition itself may play a role in some of those endothelial factors and may exacerbate it. However, when this is looked at seriously in a study, remember studies? It's hard to say. Whether or not it's an independent risk factor, So we'll chalk it up to maybe. Hyperviscosity syndromes. Again, these are all the things I learned when I was a fellow. And they told us that if somebody has multiple myeloma and you give them X-ray dye, they're at increased risk for kidney problems. Well, yeah. Why? All the things we talked about with hyperviscosity and the deep, dark, ischemic recesses of even a healthy kidney in the deep interstitium. And then they did studies that showed a significant increase in multiple myeloma patients getting AKI from contrast. However, subsequently, there were studies that showed little to no correlation if the pre-existing GFR was normal. So is it the hyperviscosity or is it the kidney problem in these patients that's the culprit? Hard to say. So again, we get back to, is it these risk factors or is it the patient? Is it the X-ray dye or is it the comorbidity? Okay, that being said, you get contrast nephrotoxicity. Is it so bad? Yeah, acutely, what do we know about this? You know, it usually gets better. No matter what we do, it just gets better. And almost everybody gets better within a week. But there's a subset of people who don't quite get all the way better. The kidneys take a hit from which they don't get better. And clearly in this era of ESCOs and all the other letter combinations that we're dealing with, we know that the length of stay is longer in people that get contrast kidney injury. And we also know that, at least for some people, the mortality rate is higher. And they are more likely, compared to people that don't get it, to ultimately require dialysis. Okay. Put it in perspective, though. What's the long-term effect of contrast nephrotoxicity? Guess what? Even if they fully recover, I don't mean the group that stayed in the hospital too long or the group that needed transient dialysis. I mean, they fully recover as near as we can tell, everything is back to baseline. And then you look at their mortality rates over the next 2 years, they're significantly higher than if they didn't get acute kidney injury. Is it the X-ray dye? Is it the comorbidities? I don't know. But that's a little scary. And when you look at people that are in this scenario, the likelihood of event-free outcomes changes if you've gotten AKI from contrast. So again, is it the X-ray dye? Is it the comorbidities? I don't know. But if someone gets it, even if they get better, it's a bad thing. So the water's really muddy. I can't tell you it's X-ray dye. I can't tell you it's atherombolic disease, which some of these folks get. I can't tell you if it's comorbidities. I can't tell you if this is just one huge selection bias when we're trying to figure this out. Because again, who gets X-ray dye? Is it the 20-something-year-old healthy person? Well, yeah, they might have a kidney stone or something, but by and large, it's not. People that get X-ray dye are getting it because there's something wrong with them. Okay. That being said, now we're all brilliant. Can we prevent this from happening? Well, I've been doing this a while, so here's a little walk down history lane. I very clearly remember in the late 80s, these guys did this brilliant study in Sweden, and they clearly looked into cause, effect, and prevention, and they decided that if you started an intravenous mannitol infusion combined with intravenous Lasix and high-dose intravenous fluids before the contrast study in patients that were at risk, they would do better. And so I was doing this. A lot of us were doing this. And boy, we were having a lot of fun with potassiums and magnesiums that we're correcting and so on. It was a real pain in the butt. And at the end of the day, it doesn't do anything. So then people came up with this idea, oh, it's a mitochondrial disease, and there's slow channels and fast channels and the membrane, and you know, if we block the calcium channel, this should really help. So they did trials with nifedipine, doesn't work. Well, if vasoconstriction is the issue, right, we all know low-dose dopamine or phenoldipam is an intrarenal vasodilator. I mean, this should prevent this, right? Doesn't work. And now, more recently, well, how about endothelin receptor antagonists? Because we talked about all these endothelial factors and how they may be playing a part in this perfect storm that leads to AKI. They don't work. Prostacycline. Remember we talked about prostaglandin inhibitors? Well, if we give you prostacycline, it could blunt or eliminate some of these vasoconstrictive effects. And what a great idea, except it doesn't work. What about, do we still use aminophylline, theophylline in lung disease? I mean, it kind of fell in disfavor, and since I have no idea. But people said, oh, this is a great idea, and you know, that doesn't work. Well, how about atrial natriuretic peptide? Now, that makes perfect sense because it's going to increase salt and water excretion, yada, yada. Get this stuff, you know, the quicker you get this stuff out of you, the less likely it is to hurt you, except it doesn't work. Bicarbonate. Oh, for a while there, we were adding sodium bicarbonate to these intravenous fluids that we were giving you because it made great sense and it was going to affect the tubular excretion. It doesn't really work. Statins, okay? Statins aren't just good for hyperlipidemia. There's an anti-inflammatory effect, right? And, oh, statins are good for everything, except it doesn't work. My favorite, N-acetylcysteine. Anybody ever smell or taste that? It's disgusting. Now, guess what? If I go home and overdose on Tylenol, you can give me that. And then, you know, if I have cystic fibrosis, you can give me that. But you know what? The brilliance here is it intensely, allegedly, hangs on to these free radicals that are so toxic. And it's going to help or prevent contrast nephrotoxicity till you look at it and it's all over the place. And so really the conclusion here is it doesn't work. Now, a lot of people give it, maybe not so much anymore, but what they would say to me is, it probably won't hurt and it might help. Let's give it because we know we don't want them to get AKI from the contrast. How many times do any of us prescribe a medicine because it probably won't hurt? I mean, that makes no sense to me. Now, I'll tell you, if you really want to give N-acetylcysteine to somebody that's going to get x-ray dye, I'm not like going to get into a fist fight with you, but it doesn't work. Okay. How about the contrast agents? Well, we talked maybe. Iodixanol, maybe. Okay. Fluids. Guess what? That's the only thing that works. There might be other stuff we haven't figured out, but fluids, if they don't go into the study dry, and we don't let them get dry, and we keep them hydrated, that's the best protection you got, aside from not giving them x-ray dye. That's a pretty good way not to get toxicity. So, now you got it, what are we going to do? Well, you know, I always say, let's start with the basics. Don't let them get any worse. So if somebody's got AKI, you know, don't give them a non-steroidal. Maybe if they're not already on it, don't give them an ACE or an ARB. Don't let them get dehydrated. Maintain an adequate cardiac output, so on and so on. All right. So let's go through this. Don't give them contrast, they won't get it. Obvious, right? Well, we do have alternatives. There are nuclear scans, there are ultrasound. Cardiologists very often in a high-risk patient, instead of doing the ventriculogram, you know, they'll get an echocardiogram or a MUGA or something and just look at the arteries with contrast. I mean, that makes perfect sense. What about CO2 angiography? Well, our brains don't really like it, so it's limited in where you can use it, but for some of the peripheral vascular work with the right equipment, you get images, but they're usable. Okay, use less. We already talked about that because, you know, at least in our hands, we use less, people seem to do okay. Hydrate. Again, this is it. That's all you need to know. Bicarb, if you really want to give it, knock yourself out. N-acetylcysteine, again, I'm not going to go to the mat fighting with you, but it doesn't work. Low ionic dye probably doesn't matter, at least in terms of AKI. Maybe this new agent, maybe, but there's no compelling studies. Here's the bottom line. You just got to be afraid of this stuff. And we use it all the time, all of us, every day, for appropriate reasons. But like everything else we do, just be aware going in. Know the risk factors, keep them hydrated, and don't let them get hurt. So that's where I'd rather be. That was in the Sawtooth Mountains in Idaho this summer. And what was really cool is it was in the 70s and I was walking in snow. How great is that? Thank you very much.